55. In the back of the truck, Wax found a mess of papers and equipment, and three corpses. Feeling a grim sense of purpose, Wax climbed in and checked each of the corpses, just in case they were feigning. He stopped before the final one. She was bloodied but breathing, and when her eyes slipped open, there was a faint red glow to them.
"Ah," she said in a rasping voice, "you are good at this. We thought we had taken enough precautions, yet here you are, breathing down our neck. Such drive, such individualism. A shame that Harmony got you first."
Wax backed away, leveling the gun at her.
"This body soon expires," the creature said. "You need not concern yourself."
"What are you?"
"You know what I am," she whispered. "Trill." "Your sister becomes Trill," the thing whispered. "The name and mythology I prepared for her to adopt. But she has not achieved it yet. And I am not Trell. Rare is it that I speak to one directly as I do you."
"Autonomy," he whispered.
"Yes, pierced by my metal, soul open to my touch."
Wax drew back further, uncertain what to think. The woman smiled, blood on her lips.
"You have nothing to fear from me. I will not intervene against you and your efforts. Your sister does not understand this sword of harmony. She pleads with me to act, but cannot see. It is only in the struggle to survive that a person, a people, achieves their potential."
"This city," he said, "everything in it, this is your fault."
"It is the fault of those who strive for more," Autonomy said. "And to their credit in the accomplishment, though I do not think your sister understands the nature of true autonomy yet. Her attempts have a fabricated, forced uniqueness to them, not the raw wounds of true individualism. She will learn. The longer she holds the power, the longer she becomes an avatar of my nature, the more she will see and understand. If she survives, you should be proud of her. Though she flirts with her own destruction, her efforts have kept this world alive. I would have attacked it years ago otherwise."
Wax frowned, stepping closer. "Where is the bomb?"
"Ah, it is not the bomb you should worry about. It is the destruction I have sent if that bomb fails."
"I think you're bluffing," Wax said.
"Think what you wish, but you yourself know the strength, the capacity one has in those moments before death. It is when the soul is pushed to the limit that true exceptionalism manifests. And so there must be a consequence, as final and terrible as death, for failure."
"And what must we do," Wax said, "to get you to leave us the hell alone?"
Autonomy's bloody lips smiled.
"Prove you deserve it."
She closed her eyes, and the body stopped breathing. Rusts. Could he believe a word of what Autonomy had said? Could he risk ignoring it? Either way, it left him more rattled than the chase had. He quickly began digging through the papers in the back of the truck anyway. He found much of it chopped to shreds, then soaked in buckets of water. They'd been trying to prevent him from getting the information. Fortunately, he found a notebook that was only halfway soaked and began flipping through, reading records of test launches. Rusts. These self-propelled rockets could travel 30 or 40 miles. How had they launched them without anyone knowing?
The ships, Wax realized. That's why they built the Navy, so they could test weapons out on the ocean.
The notes confirmed it. He checked the dates of the latest test. They matched the dates of Gave's vacation. They'd sailed out into the ocean to run tests, but the rockets had failed, or at least they hadn't performed to desired levels. They couldn't quite reach Ellendale, though the notebook was full of ideas to get them to go the little farther they needed. He put together everything of use he could find, then shoved it in a duffel bag he found near the corner. He had so little time to make sense of this, but surely somewhere in all this mess was a hint of where to find the bomb. He slung the duffel over his shoulder and stepped out of the truck. People had begun gathering, including the poor shop owner who ran the liquor store. The man stood outside, mourning his shattered window. Though Wax should have been on his way, he hesitated, then walked over and pressed some cash into the man's hand.
"Sorry," he said, "trying to prevent a catastrophe."
The man gaped at the money, but before he could reply, Wax spotted something just inside the broken window.
"Hey," he said, "is that a case of log shine?"
A short time later, Wax touched down at the laboratory where he'd left Wayne. As he'd hoped, the younger man had dealt with the enemies, even tying a few up. Now Wayne had settled down with a handkerchief that had someone else's initials on it and was wiping his nose. He looked miserable. Wax had never been forced to store health, so he could only imagine how it felt, particularly in the middle of a job. And now that the thrill of the chase was over, Wax was tired. Rusts, he shouldn't join investigations without any sleep. He wasn't 20 anymore. He walked over to Wayne, who blinked up at him. Then Wax raised two bottles of Logshine, a beer brewed in the roughs, best there was.
"Ross, Wax," Wayne said, "where did you find those?"
"Amazing what comes up in the line of duty," he said, handing one to Wayne.
"I ain't had a bottle of Logshine in years."
The man actually teared up.
"You, Ross's mate, you really do care about me, don't you?"
"I think it's time," he said to Wayne, "that we take a bit of a breather."
"Can we afford to?"
"I need to dig through what I found," Wax said, "and if we keep running into fights exhausted, we'll get ourselves killed. I think we can spare a half hour or so. Sound good?"
"Good," Wayne said. "It sounds rustin' amazing."